Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to a special midweek edition here of the Weekly Worldview as a variety of viruses and bacteria continue to rack the McBurney compound with various illnesses. But still, we're here for you. Even my extremely attractive audio engineer, who's probably has influenza. Probably, right? That's what we've kind of... We think we got the flu around here, but I guess it's going around. But we should just get right to it, and I'll try to talk over any coughing. And we need a cough button. Wait, I don't know that we have a cough button. You can hit this button if you cough. No? Oh, she's going to be fine. That's right. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't take, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take diphenhydramine upon occasion, dextromethorphan, acetaminophen, ibuprofen. Anyway, let's get to it, folks. Joe Biden. Joe Biden is, he's a career thief, murderer, and a liar. That's his whole career is built on thievery, murder, and lies. And he could fall just because he's a creep. Turns out he's creep. He's a creep. He's a creepy creep who creeps up on women from behind. And anyway. I guess the liar, murderer, and thief, that's kind of the standard DC resume. So you can do all that, but don't be a creep. And Joe's a creep. So anyway, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Go get some more hair plugs and just get out of here, Joe. I couldn't believe I was in a group and I was trying to teach pain control techniques during medical procedures. And I talked about how you can tap someone's shoulder or kind of rub on their elbow. I said, you know, little Joe Biden action and distract them from the pain. And they all laughed. And then they said they felt really sorry for Joe. He's such a sweet guy. And I had to bite my lip because I wanted to say, wait a minute, he's a liar, a thief, and a murderer. But anyway, Joe Biden, surprisingly popular amongst the uninitiated out there. But his fall could come anyway. That's all I'm going to say about that. You don't want to give Biden any more airtime. Anyway, I just don't think the other shoe has dropped with Uncle Joe yet. That's just my suspicion. We'll see. It may never drop because he's got big-time connections. You know, he's friends with the Obamas, too, and they can get you out of a lot of trouble, at least on the left and with law enforcement, especially in Chicago. In fact, let's go to Chicago. There were elections in Chicago last week, and four Democratic socialists, possibly a fifth, have won races for aldermen in Chicago. These are outright, open, flaming socialists. They admit it. They want to take the rich's money, and they want to give it to the poor, and imagine that that's very popular in Chicago, where there are a lot more poor people than there are rich people. This is why democracy is so dangerous. It's one of the reasons that democracy is so dangerous. And then to add insult to injury for any of the decent people left in Chicago, the mayor-elect there, her name is Lori. And Lori is the first black woman and the first openly gay person to be elected as the mayor of Chicago. Another milestone crossed on the swirling, sucking eddy into hell that swirls around Chicago. Now they've got a mayor who's a dyke. That's just sad. I have friends in Chicago, and I'll bet you my friends didn't vote for no dyke. But that's who you got, because the majority in Chicago and just about everywhere else, except small, small pockets, the majority are wicked, evil. That's what's... So, let's go from there. I would call this the most shocking story of the week, of the past 10 days anyway. However long it's been since I was with you last. And this qualifies as reason number 1,185 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Let's talk about one Matthew Alpin, a 42-year-old former principal at a primary school in England. Now, while he was the primary school principal, he was openly a homo, is what he was. Open about the fact that he's a homo, and yet he becomes the principal of a primary school. Well, what happened was, he was caught fornicating with two 17-year-old men he met on Grindr. And so the school decided to dismiss him. Now, I would have dismissed his application as soon as he said he was an open homo. But they didn't. They allowed him, and it was very embarrassing for everyone involved with the Tywyn Primary School in Sandfields, West Glamorgan, England. It was very embarrassing for them as he was caught fornicating with his Grindr friends. So he was dismissed, right? As you can well imagine. But he filed a lawsuit against the school, claiming that he was a victim of unfair dismissal and sexual orientation discrimination. He argued that what he had done with his friends from Grindr was lawful, and that the management at the school was obviously biased and homophobic, is what he claimed. And shock of all shocks, the Employment Appeals Tribunal there in England, well, they sided with the homo with an appetite for Grindr, who's a principal of a school. And they, well, here's their ruling. Their ruling states, quote, "The Employment Tribunal constructed two hypothetical heterosexual comparisons in Mr. Alpin's position. One being a man who had sex with two 17-year-old females, and another a woman who had had sex with two 17-year-old males. And the board found no problems with any of that, and so how can we possibly rule against the homo?" And so the school's got to pay the homo or give him his job back, or they might have to bow before him. They might become his indentured servants. Anyway, they say he was discriminated against because he was gay. And he is gay. He remains gay. It's not that he hasn't repented or changed his stripes in any way. In fact, now he's probably more steadfastly homo than he ever was before. Now he won a lawsuit. So reason number 1,185 to get or keep your children out of the government schools: people in the government thinks there's no problem with fornicating with two 17-year-olds of any sex, no matter what sex you are. Me personally, I have a problem with fornicating with 17-year-olds, no matter what. And then there's the fact that he's a homo on top of all that. So just get out of here with that. I know it's England, but I get to make up the rules about my list of reasons. It doesn't necessarily have to be American school. It doesn't even have to be a native English speaker, as a matter of fact, if I think it fits the criteria. And I thought that fit as reason number 1,185 to flee the government schools before they destroy your children and quite possibly molest them. All right. Now, speaking of molestation, let's go to the Democrat Party, where you can always find plenty of it all over the place, and some of the strangest responses and reactions come out of the Democrats. It's really, it's hard to know what their standard is. I guess it depends on who's being accused. Because in the case of Justin Fairfax, who is the attorney general in the state of Virginia, he's been accused by two women of sexual assault and rape. And the Democrat Party doesn't seem to have a problem with it. It kind of reminds me of the mayor of Denver here when he was accused of sending dirty texts. And not just accused, you could see the texts to a low-level female police officer. The Democrats didn't seem to have a problem with that. So it depends. So there was an interview this past week on CBS. One of the women who's accusing Fairfax of straight-out rape. Listen to the sad story. This should make anyone who actually cares about women and their rights, it should make them outraged. This woman, Meredith Watson, says that Fairfax knew. See, she became friends with Fairfax in college. back at Duke University in 2000. They became friends, and she confided in him that she had been raped the year prior by a basketball player there at Duke, and nothing was done about it. And so he cares so much about women and their rights that he took advantage of her vulnerable position, and he raped her as well. She said, he was a very good friend to me, which is why I never would have expected anything like this from him. That's the raping. She didn't expect that. He was a friend and a Democrat and a liberal. Watson claims Fairfax raped her in 2000 there at Duke University. And that don't forget about Vanessa Tyson. She's accused Fairfax of sexually assaulting her at the 2004 Democrat National Convention. Which, if there's any place where one should expect to be raped or to hear about rapes or see a rape in action, it would be at the Democrat National Convention. There's a lot of rape going on. But have we heard a peep about Justin Fairfax? I mean, I thought his career was over a few months ago. It seemed like there was nothing that could possibly save him from being devoured and chewed up and spit out of the Me Too movement. But the Me Too movement seems to make exceptions for certain types of men, mostly if they're pro-abort, pro-homo, and especially if they have a high melanin content in their skin. Those three criteria seem to have a greater impact on the attitude of the average Democrat toward rape than do the facts of the case. The facts of these two cases, by the way, being numerous. Definitely worthy of not only investigation, but I would say of an arrest. I would like to see Mr. Fairfax put on trial because I actually care about women and their rights. And I'm outraged that a low-life scum like Justin Fairfax would take advantage of the fact that this woman was vulnerable, had already been violated. She puts her trust in him as a friend. Anyway, if he's convicted, he deserves to be put to death for that. Just the worst type of human being on the planet and completely unrepentant, straight up in your face, calls these women liars. And it's, I guess I can't say much more. Once you call for someone to be tried and, if convicted, put to death, that's pretty much the end of the commentary on the story. Have I talked about Jussie Smollett and the charges being dropped against him? Have I talked about that on the show? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. She doesn't remember. She doesn't think so. I don't think I've been with you since all the charges were dropped against the homo with the high melanin content. She's got Smollett's attorneys say that his record was wiped clean after he was indicted on 16 felony counts. The black, gay, and they should say privileged actor allegedly falsely reported to authorities that he was attacked. But it turns out he was probably just unhappy about his career trajectory. He thought being a black homo, he'd be at the top of the game by now. But for whatever reason, his career hadn't advanced to where he thought it should have. And so he did what he did. I've got a quote here from his lawyer. Smollett's lawyer said with a straight face, "Today all criminal charges against Jussie Smollett were dropped and his record has been wiped clean of the filing of this tragic complaint against him. Jussie was attacked by two people. He was unable to identify them back on January 29th. He was a victim. He's a victim of false and inappropriate remarks made to the public, causing an inappropriate rush to judgment." And then she actually stood there and looked face to camera and kept a straight face. And nobody laughed or threw their shoe at her, which is what should have happened. Anyway, forget white privilege. This is black gay privilege. If you're a black homo, apparently you can get away with. And if you've ever spent the night with Barack Obama, which he has. And if you're friends with Michelle Obama, which he is, then you can get away with a lot. There's definitely a double standard. Listen, Jussie, we all know you didn't drop the sandwich. We all know you still had the bleached clothes on when the cops showed up. Who keeps the bleached clothes on? Who keeps the noose around their neck? Come on. And nobody ever shouted, "This is MAGA country," ever. So we all know that you're a liar and you're guilty, and hopefully somebody finds a way to charge you with something. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining us again this week here on the big show that you've all been waiting for. I know I wait for it every week. So I ran a unscientific survey over the weekend, a multiple location study on what is the best chocolate candy. And now I say it was unscientific because it was not planned. But what I did was I was at an event, and at the event we decided to get a big bowl and fill it up with candy so that we could attract people over so that we could tell them about the products and services that we hoped they would buy. And we filled the bowl with M&Ms and Baby Ruths and peanut M&Ms and Twix. And we had an equal number of all of those components in the experiment. And it turns out, hands down, Twix is the most popular candy. I don't really think it's up for debate, because when I left the event, I was allowed to take the chocolate candy home because I have young children in the house. And I was able to convince them that that's what the candy would be for. Of course, it would be for the young children. And so as I emptied the bowl into my suitcase, I noticed that there was a very low population of Twix. And a much higher population of Baby Ruths, a higher population of the peanut M&Ms, and the only thing that gave Twix a run for its money was the regular M&Ms, because it's just pure chocolate and a little candy crust there. So it's, but Twix with the cookie crunch, there's no doubt, because after I got home, I continued the experiment here at the McBurney compound, and the Twix were the first component to completely disappear from the mix. So, and now Twix is not a sponsor here on the show because we don't tolerate sponsors. And these were all fun size. These were the little, just enough to make you want more. Those little guys. So, yeah. Anyway, it says, the individual says, not labeled for retail sale. You're not supposed to sell these retail. It says right on the package there. So I wonder if they have a problem with that. People buying in bulk in the big bags and then trying to retail them one at a time. There must have been a problem with that at some time, so the lawyers had him put that right on the package. This is not for retail sale. It's supposed to be in a big bag. All right. So Twix wins. All right. But we have more important news, ladies and gentlemen. From the justice file, a gross injustice that we've been covering here at the Worldview for quite some time, is the sad story of the disposition of one John Hinckley Jr. John W. Hinckley Jr., now, according to the LA Times, now lives in a modest house on a golf course. And he runs an antiques business and has adopted a cat. Uh-huh. And just in case you don't like John Hinckley yet, after the whole adopting a cat thing, and he also drives for his mother and his older brother, who are somewhat disabled, meaning John Hinckley's a really nice guy. He says, quote, "This is the best I've ever felt in my life. I'm happy as a clam, to be honest," he said. He has to append the "to be honest" because he killed one guy and he tried to kill four other guys and he got away with it, basically. So he's a murderer and he's as happy as a clam and he lives on a golf course with his mom. Now, just to humanize John Hinckley a little more, the John Hinckley, by the way, shot Ronald Reagan in 1980. For those of you who matriculated in the government schools over the last 15 years, this is probably the first time you're hearing of this story. John Hinckley Jr. shot the president, shot his press secretary, shot an FBI agent, shot a Secret Service agent. I think he shot somebody else. And the press secretary for President Reagan eventually died, and the doctors found that his death was directly related to the injuries he suffered at the hands of cat adopter and all-around antiques guru over there at the golf course, John W. Hinckley Jr. They tell us that he has gained as much as 40 pounds, he walks with a limp, and he suffers from arthritis and hypertension. Aw, John. He's a real human guy. He's a lot like you and I. You know, except that he shot the president and killed that guy. He says he doesn't have any close friends, and he struggles with dating. Dating? How could he struggle with dating? If this guy could get a date, then civilization has deteriorated far further than I would have thought. He is living under the ruling, the releasing him by U.S. District Judge Paul Friedman released Hinckley. And he says Hinckley is permitted to drive a car unaccompanied, and with approval and oversight of his therapist, he can move out of his mother's house someday. What are the odds that'll happen? That'll never happen. He's going to move out of his mom's house. He's got a golf course. He's also allowed to anonymously use the internet to sell antiques and books and to display his artwork and music. Who would have thought John was artistic and musical? He's not only good with a pistol. Well, he's actually not that good with a pistol, but he can handle a paintbrush and maybe a keyboard. I don't know. This story makes me sick. It turns my stomach that the LA Times is basically putting out a puff piece on a murderer. They remind us that Hinckley was found not guilty by reason of insanity. And the president's, and then they go on about how Press Secretary Jim Brady actually died from being shot by Mr. Hinckley. Hinckley lives with his mother. It's in a gated community. He has a king-size bed, and his own paintings adorn the walls of his bedroom. Speaking of creepy, this guy should move in with Joe Biden. You got a cat, and you got your own paintings on the wall in your bedroom? Okay. I can see why you can't get a date. And then, of course, there's the shooting of the president and the murder and all. Now, his mother, Joanne, says he's a wonderful person. She speaks very highly of John. She says, John does everything he needs to do for me. It's like having a maid who shot the president and killed another guy. What a sweetheart. Thanks, Mom. Now, John says he did become friends with a woman as we delve into his personal life just to try to get to know John better and just get to like him a little bit more. He became friends with a woman who was a former participant in his group sessions. Now, the LA Times does not elaborate on what that means, but I think that's a bunch of mentally ill people getting together and commiserating in their mental illness in hopes of, in hopes of what? Maybe getting a date? Maybe just trying to clear your conscience of the fact that you murdered that guy? Anyway, he became friends with this woman, but then she killed herself in 2017. So further restricting his ability to get a date. Anyway, just disgusting. John Hinckley should have been put to death, and the fact that our justice system allows a man who shot the president to now live in a gated community, gain 40 pounds, and adopt a cat, it's a condemnation of the state of justice in America today. And it's also a reminder of how much people hate Ronald Reagan. They hate Ronald Reagan enough to let the guy who shot him off. It's disgusting and despicable. And that's all I got to say about that. Now, speaking of mental illness and group sessions and cats and the like, let's go to Alex Jones and his confession of psychosis. Yes, Alex Jones, if you're not familiar, Alex Jones is a conspiracy theorist nut job who has built a career on the radio lying to people about a vast number of incredibly impossible conspiracy scenarios. Well, now he says, now he's being sued, by the way. The story comes to us from CNN. Alex Jones is being sued by families of the Sandy Hook massacre victims. Yes. CNN says last week, Alex Jones acknowledged that the Sandy Hook shooting was real during a sworn deposition. See, Alex Jones had claimed on the air that the Sandy Hook shooting was all staged and they were all actors. That's what he had claimed on the air. Or I don't know if he claimed it himself, actually. I think he allowed people, he interviewed people who claimed that, and then he encouraged them in their delusion and their encouragement of his hapless audience to believe the delusion. I believe that's what he did. I don't think he actually ever spoke it with his own lips, because I think he found out after 9/11 that people were starting to think he was just a total whack job. And so he decided to let others do the dirty work of actually speaking this insanity onto the air. But he encouraged it, and he admits now that he even believed it. He says, I have almost had like a form of psychosis in the past where I basically thought everything was staged, even though I've now learned a lot of times things aren't staged, unquote. So did you catch that? That's not quite a full confession there, Alex. He says he's now learned that a lot of times things aren't staged. So Alex, all of the time things are not staged, you nut job. 9/11 was not staged. The Las Vegas massacre was not staged. Columbine was not staged. The Marjorie Stoneman Douglas massacre was not staged. It's not some of the times, Alex. It's all, every time you say something was staged, it was not staged. And Alex, you're going to continue to suffer from your peculiar type of psychosis unless you're able to look in the mirror and say, you know what? It was every time. And then you might be able to start reaching out for a better grip on reality, to try to return to the civilized family of man instead of being an outcast nut job and a mentally deranged person who's headed for a significant crack up at some point. All right. Here's what Alex says caused the psychosis. It was a form of psychosis. It was like Alex Jones-cosis. It wasn't a psychosis that any professional psychologist or psychiatrist could ever diagnose or be familiar with. It was a particular strain in Alex Jones's cranium. He says, quote, it was the trauma of the media and the corporations lying so much, it caused me to distrust everything. Kind of like a child whose parents lie to them over and over again. Unquote. That's, Alex says he's like a child whose parents lied to him. Alex, please. If you're a small child and your parents actually lie to you, you know, like you're the, let's say you're the son or daughter of one of the Khmer Rouge, right? And your mom and dad convince you that the Khmer Rouge is a wonderful organization. Hey, if you matriculated in the government schools, you have to go look up the Khmer Rouge yourself. I'm not going to explain everything to you people. Well, that kid could develop a certain type of psychosis because his parents are telling him that evil is good. But Alex, your parents didn't lie to you. You had other whack jobs on your radio show lying to you and everyone else. So if you do suffer from any type of psychosis, I think it's self-inflicted. I think you suffer from a self-inflicted strain of peculiar psychosis that you are obviously not over yet. But I will agree with you on one point, Mr. Jones. You certainly do behave like a child.
The wreck is going.
Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That was news from the land of psychosis, which continues. The psychosis continues to grow. It's a mass psychosis that's enveloping almost all of civilization as the drug addicts and the homosexuals and the pedophiles are taking over. Hey, what's the deal with Matt Drudge being absolutely bedazzled, absolutely enthralled by the mayor of South Bend, another homo, whose name is actually Pete Buttigieg? Buttigieg? I don't know. The name just, it strikes me as an omen, and I'm not a particularly superstitious person, but if we were to elect a Buttigieg president, I just don't like it, that's all. But mostly because he's a homo, and a liberal, and a socialist, and a liar, and a killer, and a thief. All of his policies endorse all of the things I just mentioned. And on top of that, he's a homo. And Matt Drudge just can't seem to get enough of him. I don't understand what's going on in Matt's dark little mind. But anyway, let's go on to the Queering of America file. This is actually a sub-file. This is the Queering of North America, because the story's from Canada. And for those of you who matriculated in the government schools, Canada is a part of America, it's part of North America. And so this is from the Queering of North America file. From LifeSite News, a British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal has ruled that a Christian activist, discriminated against a man who claims to be a woman. How did he discriminate against this tranny? Well, the Christian distributed flyers that referred to the man as, quote, a biological male, unquote. He did what? How hateful and mean and vicious. The tranny refers to himself as a female. The Christian referred to him as a biological male, and therefore the tranny took the biological male to court. And the court has ruled, shockingly enough, for the tranny. The tranny, by the way, is a transgender activist. You know, it seems these days all trannies are transgender activists. Are there any trannies that just shut up and do whatever trannies do? No. They're all activists now. And this one's name is Morgane Ogre, who was born Ronan Ogre. And he filed a suit against Christian activist Bill Watcott, who was born Bill Watcott. Yeah, uh-huh. And he's declared that it was discriminatory on the part of Christian activist. Golly, I can't even speak. This is my first day without any drugs at all. Maybe that was a mistake. Probably needed one more day on the diphenhydramine and the NyQuil and the ibuprofen. I don't know. Anyway, the tranny declared that, the court declared that it is discriminatory not to accept transgender people as the gender they claim to be. So that's discrimination now. Is anybody shocked? No, we're not shocked. This is the way of all flesh in the new millennium. That we're now, and they can even make up genders that don't even exist or didn't exist before they made them up. And you better toe the line, mister. And by mister, I don't mean to imply that you're, I don't mean to narrow your gender fluidity in any way, mister. Mrs. Miss. The court that sided with the tranny issued a 104-page ruling. Okay, so the right there, you got to stop and you got to wonder, what kind of time does this tranny court, what do they call it? A British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal. What kind of time do they have on their hands that they're going to write a 104-page ruling saying that you can make up any gender you want, and if you're a Christian, we're going to take you for everything you've got. If you're a Christian who stands up and offers even the slightest, all he did was say the guy's a biological male. Anyway, if you don't bow the knee, this should have been in the Mark of the Beast file. I'm changing the file name so we keep these things on file, you know. The Mark of the Beast file. You will bow before your homosexual superiors or you will not be able to buy or sell. And by the way, this Christian activist, Bill Watcott, born Bill Watcott. He's not going to be able to buy and sell because they're making him give the tranny $55,000. They ordered Watcott to pay the tranny $35,000 for injuries to his dignity, feelings, and self-respect, eh? And an additional $20,000 for alleged improper conduct during and before the hearing. Yes. That the tribunal says that the Christian did not act properly. And if you look deeply enough into the story, I believe he peed standing up during one of the breaks, and the tribunal was extremely offended that a man would do that right there in their tribunal. I don't even think that's legal in Canada for a man to do anymore. Anyway, here's what Watcott actually did that offended the judge. I made up the part about, okay, I'll move on. I expected my extremely attractive audio engineer to either laugh or gasp, but there was virtually no reaction. So anyway, Christian activist Bill Watcott, born Bill Watcott, described the tribunal hearing as, quote, a kangaroo show trial, unquote. And that's what offended the tribe. That cost him $20,000 to say that. He says he's not surprised by the decision. The flyer that Mr. Watcott distributed also stated, quote, those who promote falsehoods like gender fluidity do so to their eternal peril. They tacked on the $20,000 for that one too, I'm sure. I'd say that's worth $20,000. Although it's a shame he has to give it to the tranny. But there you go, folks. That's the state of North America as a civilizational psychosis rolls in like a dust storm over Phoenix or a haboob over Saudi Arabia, darkening the landscape, making it harder and harder to clearly make out reality. But we're here to shine a light through the dust particles before they gather on the brains of too many people, and hopefully we can blow some of them out of your eyes so that you can see clearly and learn how to judge rightly. All right. So we go now. Where should I go? Here. We have reason number 1,186 in no particular order to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A fifth grader in Waltersboro, South Carolina, has died from injuries suffered in a fight at a South Carolina elementary school. Yes, little Rania Wright was knocked unconscious at Forest Hills Elementary, and she died in the hospital 2 days later. She's a fifth grader, and the student that killed her is also a fifth grader and has been suspended. So don't think the schools don't enforce some discipline. She has been. The other student, which is not identified, we don't know if it's a boy or a girl, we don't know how that person may identify, but that person has been suspended. School board member, one of the members of the school board, William Bowman, says he wants more answers. Listen to what the hapless school board member says. He says, quote, what I would like for all parents to understand is that our schools are safe. Okay, well, stop right there, Mr. Bowman. I thought we were talking about the fact that a little girl was killed by a student at your school during a fight. That doesn't sound so safe. So are you sure you want to continue, Mr. Bowman? Because you sound like a fool. But he did continue. He says, quote, there isn't a teacher or a staff member or an administrator in our district that doesn't have the safety of our students in highest regard. I want more answers on this. All right. Notice the negatives. There isn't a teacher that doesn't have the safety of our students in highest regard. Anyway, I don't want to analyze this too much. But the board member, obviously, losing touch with reality. When students in your school are killing one another in fights, it's okay to stand up and say, I think we have a safety issue here at the school. But no, they'll deny it all the way to the end. Because, well, I don't know, because he's a bureaucrat. Do school board members even get paid? I can't remember if a school board is a voluntary thing. Probably a paid position. Probably started out as voluntary back 150 years ago, 200 years ago. But now they're probably well-heeled government bureaucrats. Don't want to upset anything. You know, I've got a retirement to fund here. I understand there's a dead girl out there on the playground, but I've got to retire. I want you to know that I care about safety. Get out of here with that. Reason number 1186, your child could be killed by another child at school. But at least the killer will be suspended. That at least that precedent has been it's been set and duly noted here at the Weekly Worldview. The punishment for killing another child in a fight is suspension. All right, so all that bad news. I always have a lot of bad news, and I apologize if you feel like maybe I have a lot of bad news all the time. But anyway, society's on its way to hell in a handbasket. And so as you sit back and observe the events of the day, a lot of them are quite disturbing and qualify as bad news. But here is some good news. I've got a story about the cyclone, the bomb cyclone. That was the big blizzard that hit Colorado and it moved across Nebraska and Kansas and just pummeled the Midwest. It was a brutal storm. And one young mother, Riley Fisher, found herself going into labor 12 weeks prematurely in the middle of the blizzard out there in Sydney, Nebraska, as the monster storm pounded the plains. So she took off to try to get to the hospital. The heavy snow, fierce winds, whiteout conditions. Her husband's trying to get her into the car, get her to the hospital, but they didn't get very far. Riley's water broke. And she told her husband, we need to call the police because we can't see anything. They can't drive. It's a blizzard. It's horrible. So her husband, Dustin, stopped. He called 911. And the police eventually came and found them and took them to the hospital there near Sydney, where young Edwin Fisher was born. The baby made it. But the tiny hospital there in Sydney was not equipped to handle such a premature birth. And there was no way to transport the baby to a hospital that could help him because the blizzard was so fierce. And so doctors reached out to the NICU at Rocky Mountain Hospital for Children in Denver. They said the baby's life was on the line. That's according to Dr. Anna Zimmerman. She says the baby's lungs were not fully developed, and he desperately needed medication that the Nebraska hospital did not have. The baby's life was in danger. So, Logan County Sheriff Deputy Casey Swindle got the medication in Sterling, Colorado, and followed a snowstorm, basically blinded by the whiteout blizzard, followed a snowplow to the Nebraska border, where he handed the medication over to Nebraska law enforcement, who took over, and in a blinding snowstorm, risking their own lives, they drove the medication to the hospital and saved little Edwin Fisher's life. Dr. Zimmerman says that this baby is alive because of them. These guys are heroes. This is genuine American heroism at its best. Now, little Edwin remains in the hospital at last report, getting care. His family is grateful. And it looks like little Edwin is going to be okay. He was flown to Rocky Mountain Hospital for Children here in Denver to get the care he needed after the blizzard stopped. When it was, you were to go out in that blizzard, you were taking your life into your hands. And so we want to thank Logan County Sheriff's Deputy Casey Swindle, and whoever it was in Nebraska, there's another hero, and if we get a chance, we'll name him. But that's just phenomenal. And this, ladies and gentlemen, not only is it heroic, these police officers, sheriff's deputies, we're enforcing the right to life. They were enforcing the right to life. And the interesting thing about how they did it is that nobody had to tell them that there was a rule. Nobody had to tell them that the baby had a right to life. And that life had to be protected. Even at the risk of your own life. Nobody had to write it down. Nobody had to tell them. to go out and enforce the law. But they did it. They did it out of love. Because the law exists. The right to life exists. And thank God for these officers enforcing the right to life through nothing more than bravery and love. And you are one with the cause. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I want to thank the Thin Blue Line for being out there and proving what laws really exist and how they must be enforced. Anyway, so let's go now to the Times of Israel, where two 2,600-year-old inscriptions recently uncovered in the city of David's Gavadi parking lot excavation are vastly enlarging the understanding of ancient Jerusalem in the late 8th century BCE. BCE? Oh, yeah, it's the Times of Israel. They got an extra letter on there. They try to cut Jesus out by calling it the Common Era, whatever that means. Because, like, this era isn't common to me or you. I mean, we're not living in it. So it's just weird. They should just stick with BC, before Christ. Everybody knows what that means, crying out loud. All right. Anyway, what we've got here is a stone seal belonging to Ichar, son of Matanyahu. And the other is a clay seal impression belonging to Nathan Melech, servant of the king. Uh-huh. And Nathan Melech, by the way... is named in 2 Kings as an official in the court of King Josiah, king of Judah, as a matter of fact. And researchers say that this is a rare in situ find, which means they found something where it was actually used. They say this building is a large two-story First Temple structure that archaeologists believe was an administrative center, and it makes sense that the seal would be utilized there for official documents and things like that. So very, very fascinating and interesting. They say the structure bears clear signs, by the way, of destruction in the 6th century before Christ, which corresponds to the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC, as recorded in the Bible. So I'm not keeping an official count, but I believe this is the 1,006,000th piece of evidence confirming the text of the Bible. And the interesting thing is, if they keep digging, they'll find some more, as a matter of fact. Because the Bible is an accurate historical narrative. And when archaeologists go out to dig in the Middle East, they usually have a Bible with them. Because it's very helpful. All right. So not that I don't really need to be convinced. I already believe the Bible. I believe there is one true living God and that his son Jesus Christ came to save us from our sins. I believe there's a judgment coming and I believe the Bible is true, but it's just fun to see right in your face, God hits the atheist with the archaeologist's spade, smacks him across the face with it. I like it. Dig it. All right. Now, what else? Oh, here, speaking of science, we go, that was from our science file. This is now the science, really, file, where scientists say that they can now pinpoint the moment that that the dinosaurs died. The New York Daily News reports that paleontologists in North Dakota have uncovered a new stash of fossils formed instantaneously after an asteroid struck the Earth nearly 66 million years ago. And the 66 million years is stated as a fact. Now, I believe that was before the Common Era. And I don't know that anyone has actually... I don't think there is any contemporaneous evidence or records of 66 million years ago, nor is there any forensic evidence that this meteor impact occurred 66 million years ago. But the New York Daily News and paleontologists and just about everyone states this 66 million years as if it is a fact. But let's get to the instant. That's the science really part. But the rest of this is really interesting. They say that amazing detailed fossils of fish and other animals appear. It appears that they were unable to escape glassy fragments that plummeted from the sky, caused by the impact of this meteor off the Yucatan Peninsula there in Mexico. And they say that these fossils offer a peek into events that occurred minutes after the asteroid crashed into the planet. The asteroid, believed to have been about 8 miles wide, splashed into the Gulf of Mexico, tossed billions of tons of vaporized rock into the sky in every direction across thousands of miles. And they say at the dig site in North Dakota, these fossils recorded the moment bead-sized balls, known as tektites, were ingested by the creatures, including the fish, which had the debris embedded in their gills. So that's pretty cool. So I believe that there was a meteor impact, and I believe that these tektites and this event happened. I just have a problem with the 66 million years, because there's a whole lot of other math that just doesn't add up. But I don't want to go into that too much. I don't want to offend any atheists or old earthers or people who believe in the Big Bang and the Darwinian myth and all that stuff. I don't want to hurt your feelings. But if we could ever sit down one-on-one and debate, I could probably tell you things that you never heard about before that would shake your entire worldview, as a matter of fact. And if you want to, if you're willing, and if you're not afraid of facts that maybe you were never exposed to before, just Google Real Science Radio and check out that radio show, because there's some stuff on there that will enlighten you, blow your mind, and it might just shake your worldview enough that you wake up and come out from under the dark cloud of the civilizational psychosis that seems to be engulfing just about everyone. It's just scary. Now, I don't have any more news, at least not that's interesting. I have a story on red light cameras. How do you feel about red light cameras? Anyway, it turns out about half the people who get these red light camera tickets, they don't pay them. And I kind of feel like an idiot because I pay them. I don't know. I'm generally scared of the government. I really would rather them not have anything against me. Anyway, the state of Texas issued about 250,000 of these tickets last year, and just over 100,000 of them were paid. The rest go to collection agencies, and then I don't know what happens. Anyway, these red light cameras are making a fortune for the cities. And I hear claims on both sides that, yes, they're effective. No, they're not effective. I don't really know. The thing is I never noticed them. That's why I get these tickets. So I don't think they're helping that much because I don't notice them. I mean, I only notice them when I get the ticket in the mail. And so I don't know how that makes the intersections any safer. But anyway, listen to this. This is why I downloaded this story. One Republican state representative, he wants Texas to turn off the red light cameras because he says, quote, "This definitely violates due process. If your accuser is a camera, you cannot face him in court," unquote. Well, that's just stupid. I mean, have you seen the pictures of me running the red light? I mean, it's a pretty effective witness. I'm there with a stupid look on my face, my mouth gaped open because I just saw the flash. It's kind of indisputable. My car's halfway out there in the intersection. I think it's a really good witness. And by the way, when we talk about witnesses, we don't mean just eyewitnesses people. We also mean forensic evidence, like the picture of me with my mouth half open, not believing that I just got popped by another red light camera. It's a good, so that's just a bad argument. And then he says it turns our legal system upside down. You're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. Well, that's just stupid. I mean, I am guilty. There's a picture of me halfway in the intersection. The light is red. I'm guilty before being proven guilty. You just haven't. The camera pretty much proved me guilty. Now we just need to go through an administrative process to find out how much money I have to give the government over the whole thing. Now, I have a problem with that, paying the government fines for when I do things that are wrong. That just shouldn't be the punishment. But that's a whole other argument. Anyway, this is why I think civilization's gone to hell in a handbasket. It's that even the so-called conservatives, even the people who think they're conservatives, are so utterly confused about what is right and what is wrong, is that we're never going to win against the leftist maniacs who know exactly what's wrong and want to do it and want to get us to participate and wants to make everyone else just like them. Wrong, evil, perverted, corrupt, liars, thieves, murderers, and creeps. Like Joe Biden himself, to kind of close the loop on all that. All right, that's it, folks, for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Real Science Radio, check it out, and at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen, here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.